are Locked On Pistons, your daily Detroit Pistons podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
5 seconds left. He's got the ball. He should have it. Isaiah hangs on the ball, flips it up to the Raptors. Detroit is the city of champions again.
Detroit basketball.
What up? Welcome to the Locked On Pistons podcast, your episode for Tuesday, December the 10th, and 4 out of 5 for the Pistons. Can you believe it? This is your boy, Matt Shook, the host of the Locked On Pistons podcast, the sports writer here in Detroit City covering the NBA for the Detroit News and Associated Press, Pistons fan and follower my whole life, just like you guys, and a sports newspaper reporter for over a decade as well. Thanks for spreading the word. Thanks for listening to the Locked On Pistons podcast. Today, we're going to run down the details from Monday's victory, Derrick Rose with the game winner. I'm going to give you my three biggest takeaways from this one, and I also got a take on Pistons' point differential. Everyone talking about how the point differential is so good, and I'll tell you why. I take a contrarian view on what that might mean about this team. But give me a follow on Twitter, by the way, at @Matt_Shook, S-C-H-O-C-H. Another underscore for that. Also the Locked On Pistons Twitter account. And check us out on Facebook at Locked On Pistons Dash. Matt Shook, but you know me, excuse my English, but I was born for this shit, to host the Locked On Pistons podcast, and I'm excited to do it today here for you guys on the Locked On Podcast Network. But the Pistons got the win, 105-103 on Monday night, a sluggish game, but one that ends in great fashion for the Detroit Pistons, as Derrick Rose delivers the game winner in the lane, fourth win out of 5 games for the Detroit Pistons, who improved to 10-14. Still not great. But anyway, ninth place in the Eastern Conference right now. Just a game and a half out of the Eastern Conference playoffs behind the Orlando Magic. 3.5 games behind the Brooklyn Nets for the seventh spot in the East. But the bad news, if Vegas is right and it kind of shakes out the way it could, the Pistons might lose the next 4 out of the next 5. So they'd be right back at 7 games under .500 at 11-18 there. But we'll see if the Pistons can right the ship and show that they've really gotten healthy and really have improved things defensively and maybe get some offensive flow going, continue to knock down some shots, and prove that they can beat some good teams coming up with Dallas, Houston, Washington, well, to a lesser extent. I don't include them as the good teams. That's my win out of the next 5 games. And then Toronto and Boston after that. The schedule is a bitch the rest of the way. It really is, except for January. We'll talk about that tomorrow or later on this week as we break down the schedule a little bit more. But 538.com, I know we'd like to check in with these guys occasionally, especially as the season is getting close to winding down, saying that the Pistons have a 30% chance of making the playoffs after tonight's action when the Pistons win and the Magic lost to the Milwaukee Bucks. Before the day in hoops, ESPN's BPI was even more optimistic before two positive results for the Pistons. 36.5% chance of making the playoffs there. And Basketball Reference, their playoff probabilities are even more optimistic. And again, these are before the Pistons won on Monday and the Magic lost as well. And those guys, BasketballReference.com, one of the best websites in America if you do what I do for your profession, 41.7% for the Pistons there. Love the stats. Love the projections of 538.com. Pistons now 3-9 on the road. Not very good, and 2-1 against Western Conference teams. Pretty good, thanks to the schedule, of course, for that. The Pistons improved to 4-7 against bad teams. I put New Orleans in that bad team mix right now as they lost their ninth straight game. They're probably going to lose 11 straight with their next two being tough ones as well. So hurrah, Pistons now 4-7 against bad teams. You're supposed to be well over 500 against bad teams, but we'll take what we can get at this point, a very sad stat. But the good news, 21 points for Derrick Rose, including 17 points in the fourth quarter. If he had scored just those 17 points in the fourth quarter, he would have been the team's leading scorer in this one, and he also had 7 assists in off the bench as well. So obviously the game's top player for the Pistons on Monday night. 16 points for Langston Galloway in a supporting role off the bench as well. On his birthday in his hometown, hopefully the guys win all out afterwards on Bourbon Street to celebrate Langston Galloway's birthday and a big victory. Go ahead, get tore up. Who cares? You got to recover tomorrow in Mexico and be ready to play Luka Doncic and the Mavericks on Thursday in Mexico City. Those two guys led the bench for the Pistons. 46 points was scored by the starters, the starting five. whereas 59 points for the Pistons was scored by the bench. So an unreal ratio there, and kudos to the bench guys for getting it done. 14 points for Luke Kennard in a starting role, 13 points and 10 rebounds for Andre Drummond. He only played 25 minutes because of foul trouble. Wah, wah. We've heard that one before plenty of times with Andre Drummond. Maybe in year 9 he'll start getting it together with the foul trouble. But off the bench, 9 points for Christian Wood, 8 points for Svi Mykhailiuk, 8 for Bruce in the start. I'm sorry, off the bench, 6 points for Tony Snell in his starting role. Actually, Bruce starting as well. Sorry, a little bit of a brain fart there. But and why am I still reading the scores as we get down to 6 points? Because I wanted to pass along just how many mediocre games that people had and had still better scoring outputs than one Blake Griffin, who had one of his worst games as a member of the Detroit Pistons. He tied Markieff Morris with what? Drumroll? 5 points. 4 turnovers for Blake Griffin. 5 points. 34 minutes played. 1 of 9 from the field. A game that he would obviously like to forget going forward. And the Pistons had also had 18 turnovers, speaking of things that they want to forget. Turnovers and fouls, we'll touch on that a little bit later. But by the way, Brandon Ingram, holy crap, that was impressive from him. 31 points in the loss, big shot late, and then missed a airballed another shot even later than that with Blake Griffin playing good defense in the half court. But like I said, Pistons in Mexico City on Thursday for a home game against the Dallas Mavericks and Luka Doncic. Then Saturday at Houston, as the Rockets will be on the second half of back-to-back after they play at Orlando on Friday. So hopefully they beat the Magic and then come home and are too tired to beat the Pistons. Best case scenario for your Detroiters there. And then the Pistons home on Monday against the Washington Wizards, trying to get some revenge against Scottie Brooks, Bradley Beal, and all of them. But if you're a Spotify listener, use Spotify Wrapped to show us your top Locked On podcast for the year. Take a screenshot and tag us at Locked On Live. And, of course, my Twitter account at Matt_Shook, S-C-H-O-C-H. Another underscore after that. Do that to us on Twitter. We will share it. We will retweet it. And we will show you how cool you are and how great you are to be a frequent listener of Locked On podcasts, including the Locked On Pistons podcast. But I got my 3 biggest takeaways from Monday night. That's coming up here next on the Locked On Pistons podcast.
Yes, sir!
What's the feeling there on that final possession?
Excuse my English, but I'm born to do this shit. Like, yeah, serious. This is what I do. That's one of the reasons why they brought me here.
Derrick Rose, born to do this shit. But speaking of born to do this shit, I've got a take on Pistons point differential a little bit later. That's why you guys brought me here. That's why, I was made for this. So that's what I got for you guys later on. But I got 3 takeaways from Monday's game for you. First of all, how about the honorable mention one? The fouls. The Pistons racked up all sorts of fouls. Andre Drummond was in foul trouble throughout the night. Luke Kennard picked up 3 early. There's Derrick Rose as I kind of scroll through my phone to grab something later. But I think the traveling violations, a lot of the Pistons situations with their turnovers were because of travels, and these were being called by the referees early and often throughout the night. And I'm not going to criticize the officials. This is basketball. You have to adjust to it. The officials call different games in different ways. In a perfect world, that would, of course, not be the case. But adjust to it. I didn't see a lot of bad calls being made. I didn't see a lot of inconsistencies. A basketball game is a living, breathing thing. And if officials are going to be travel happy, you got to be a little bit more careful. Smart teams adjust, smart players adjust, and take the cues from the official and figure out what they need to do throughout the game. So that's my honorable mention, biggest takeaway from this one. My third one, as we go in descending order of numbers, but ascending order of importance, I think I got that right there. We're going to hit up World of Isaac, Andy Isaac. I think if you're on Twitter, you follow him. Works for UpRocks, the Fatter Day guy. I'm trying to track him down for an interview sometime soon on the podcast as a big Pistons guy himself. But he posted some stuff about Derrick Rose and really excited about Derrick Rose with the quote, I'm here. I was born for that shit, and excuse my English, by the way. But Isaac apparently got some pushback from some people, the negative Pistons fans out there, the negative former Pistons fans or haters, whatever you want to call them. So Isaac came back with a quote, quoting some of these haters, saying it doesn't matter that the Pistons aren't going anywhere. And he says, man, STFU, which shut the fuck up. Of course, that means we're going to swear a lot today. Parental guidance on this edition of Locked On Pistons. But Andy goes on, some of us want to see our teams win every so often. Stop being miserable assholes on the internet. End quote there from Isaac. World of Isaac on Twitter. You probably follow him already if you're into Detroit sports, but definitely give him a follow. If you don't, a lot of funny stuff. One of those guys who does Twitter right. And Andy is absolutely right about that. Do not feel ashamed to root for your team. Do not feel ashamed to tweet about your team. Do not feel ashamed to be happy about your team winning, even if it's hurts the draft position, even if the organization might not be going in the correct way, all that kind of stuff. Take joy in the little moments. I mean, how many game winners are the Pistons going to hit this year? Spoiler alert, it's not going to be too many. But between Friday, staring down a good team in the face and beating them at home, going punch for punch in the final of the fourth quarter, outplaying them down the stretch with some of our favorite players, some of our favorite playmakers, the Derrick Roses of the world, the Blake Griffins of the world, the Andre Drummonds of the world, guys that we've been with for a long time, in Andre's case, a short time, with some of those other guys' case. Those guys take shots, and we give some shots here on this podcast sometimes because we got to call it like we see it. But those are our guys, and when they make some plays like that, we got to get excited. So don't be afraid to be like Isaac. Celebrate the Pistons and continue doing that if you are a fan. And not to say that you can't be critical, not to say that you can't question the direction, not to say they shouldn't rebuild or whatever you think the strategy is going forward, but don't be afraid to celebrate the victories in any way that you see fit. Do it safely, though, as told by your buddy Matt here on the Locked On Pistons podcast. The second most important takeaway is, man, that defensive ceiling really showed up. The type of players that cause problems for the Pistons, Brandon Ingram, the Gumby types, the unicorns, the really long athletic wings. The Pistons are not a very athletic team. We know that. Those kind of players. Bruce is too small to really do much with them. Christian Wood tried and did okay on Brandon Ingram at times, but you talk about the Kevin Durant types, the Giannis Antetokounmpo types, and those guys are the unicorns. Those are two of the best offensive players in NBA history, but guys with that similar body type that are very good players in some cases, like Brandon Ingram, who appears to be ascending into possibly an all-star type down the road, if not even this season. I'm sure the Pelicans' lack of success as a team is going to hurt him in that regard, but And there's lesser guys that are of that body type that may not even be those type of players and may not even be those type of athletes at all. But they still give the Pistons problems. Brandon Ingram certainly in that mold. He might be getting there. He's in that stratosphere anyway. But definitely that long body type that's so hard to deal with for a lot of teams. You know, Sekou can't get here too quickly. That's for sure. It'd be nice to have him here and contributing. I'm not saying that we need to bring him up and rush him up from Grand Rapids right away. But, man, he's really going to help in that regard down the road. Talking about, you know, the best case options right now on those types of players, you know, I don't mind throwing Andre Drummond at him a little bit, especially a bigger guy like Giannis that you can, you know, rough up a little bit. Giannis is like a whole different ball game where you just got to mix it up guy after guy after guy. Markieff Morris, body him a little bit, you know, all that good stuff. But for the normal types, the human types of that regard, the human types of superhumans, Tony Snell. Geez, man, just like kind of what we expected. Not very good. Not a difference maker in any way, shape, or form, offensively or defensively. This was one of those games Monday night where he was out there for 24 minutes. It shocked me when I looked at the box score and saw that. He was in there for half the game. I could have swore he was out there not much at all. He's kind of as advertised, can stand still and make some shots, but you'll just forget he's out there for quarters at a time. Really, ideally, like a back-of-the-rotation type of role player, and maybe even serviceable as a backup three as a worst-case scenario. But, well, he's the starter, obviously, for the Pistons. Not good for business, but it is what it is, and he should be the starter. It's a short-term thing for this franchise trying to bridge a gap here. The Pistons were in very dire straits and still are, but Tony Snell at the small forward spot makes things a little bit less dire in that regard. But we know with Svita Mykhailiuk's development, possibly, and Sekou Doumbouya's, hopefully, development, help could be on the way on the small forward positions, and you could always use more, so the Pistons should be looking at that as well. My first takeaway, and I hate to be the turd in the punch bowl here, but man, I thought a few times in this game, it really just stuck out to me about the flawed offense with a definite ceiling that this Pistons team has right now. especially in the unsuccessful times in the first half when Blake Griffin really just went to work on that bully ball. He just puts his butt down and tries to score. It happens. It works sometimes. Blake Griffin can get hot. He's the best player on this team. Nobody's arguing these points. But just the way that that offense goes is not conducive to getting other players open, doing things. I mean, we all know this. I mean, isolation ball, individual ball is not a thing that leads to great things unless you have a Kevin Durant type of player. Now, Blake Griffin at times, especially if the offense is struggling, and it might be the best option at times. Obviously, this was not the case on Monday. He really struggled. And there's just not a lot that can work off of it. He's not looking to pass enough when he's working himself down in the post like that. It almost becomes like a mano-a-mano thing where it's like, I got to back you down. I got to score on you. I started this challenge. I got to finish this challenge. And it's just another reason why I think that looking to trade Blake Griffin is something that the Pistons should do. I think that it would be painful. They're not going to get better by doing that, no doubt about that. But down the road, you can kind of open up some avenues for some better offense, some more consistent offense, some better-looking offense. It's just kind of ugly at times. And in that regard, I know it's a weird timing to talk about this in the same wavelength, but Derrick Rose in the fourth quarter, while he played so well and obviously had the 17 points, I'm just not a fan of just Derrick Rose isolation for your crunch time offense. It's really just not going to – it's going to hurt you more times than it's going to help you. We know about the mid-range jump shots. I see people – the mid-range crew is out there saying, hey, game winner, mid-range, hitting a couple of mid-range shots out there in the fourth quarter. And like we all know, it's just not efficient. It's not something you should never do, nothing like that. I'm not saying don't ever mid-range. Sometimes it is a decent option, and we know Derrick Rose can knock it down a little bit. But if that's the things you go to offensively, and I'm not – again, it might be one of the best options. And on Monday, it definitely was the best option. Derrick Rose deserved those touches. Derrick Rose played really well, and the game was going to go on to Derrick Rose's shoulder at the very end, and I'm fine with that. On these types of nights where Blake was really fighting it, Andre's obviously not going to create his own stuff. I would have liked to see Langston Galloway out there more instead of Bruce Brown, especially when you need to get some buckets. But Bruce did an admirable job on Ingram at times. Kudos to Bruce for following around J.J. Redick and leaving him to a really crappy game. I thought Drew Holiday really struggled, even though he ended up with 20-plus. But, man, that offensive ceiling of Blake Griffin and Derrick Rose, I think it kind of showed itself a little bit, especially with Blake struggling throughout this game. But up next, we are going to talk about the Pistons' point differential stat. I got a hot take on point differential. That's coming up next here on the Locked On Pistons podcast, which is a proud member of the Locked On Network, your team every day. All right, and I know you come to the Locked On Pistons podcast for hot takes about point differential, but I got some pushback here against the argument that I'm seeing out there that the Pistons are better than their record indicates, and the main source, or one of the main sources of that, is that the Pistons actually have a positive point differential. Despite the fact that they're 10-14, they are outscoring opponents by an average of 0.3 points per game. So the argument goes from some in the stats community that it's an indicator of how good of a team is, even more so than the record. And you could see positive signs for it if you're a Pistons fan. On the other hand, you have a team like Charlotte, who is 9-16, so neck and neck in most regards with the Pistons, a game and a half below them. But they have a point differential, a negative one, of nearly 8 points per game. So the thinking goes that because the Pistons are more of a 500-looking team in their point differential, that they have staying power, and a team like Charlotte is going to fade. Now, I'm not making the point that Charlotte is not going to fade. I'm not really making any kind of point on them at all. I'm just saying for the Pistons' sake, I don't think that just because that they've scored more points than their opponents this season, that that's a sign that they're definitely going to get better. You see this in every sport. And to me, it's BS. I mean, I don't have a problem with run differential. I think in baseball, it's a little bit more of an apropos thing because the whole point of baseball is to score more runs than the other team. Now, I hear you guys snickering out there, but I think it's a little bit different in basketball. I think in baseball, there's a never-ending clock. You can just go all night and continue to score runs. in basketball, it's more of the flow of the game and how certain games go. And sometimes you got to give up and just kind of stick a fork in teams and move on to the next night. I'm arguing that just because the Pistons stomped the Spurs, they stomped the Hawks once, they stomped the Knicks, they stomped the Cavs, at some point those teams gave up. At some points the floodgates opened up, the Pistons couldn't stop hitting shots, all that kind of stuff. That doesn't mean the fact it doesn't mean more than the fact that they've lost three close games to the Charlotte Hornets. If anything, to me, it might be the opposite. The fact that the Pistons ran away and had huge second halves against some of those lowly teams, to me, that means less about how good of a team that they are than the fact that they lose three close games to the lowly Charlotte Hornets. Look, you know, we know blowouts happen in the NBA. It happens night in and night out. We know crazy shooting nights happen between teams, and sometimes it's your opponent that does it. It's going to happen for you. It's going to happen against you. Sometimes you just get it going. Sometimes guys are feeling it. Sometimes the energy's going. Sometimes the arena's rocking, and sometimes it's the complete other way around, and you just can't get anything done. You can't hit anything. I mean, we've all seen it. Good teams, bad teams, everyone. But we also know that more games are going to come down to the final minutes, neck and neck. Make plays in the fourth quarter. Every team's going to have those kind of games. Winning those games, defending in those games, executing offensively at the end, that's a more productive way of boosting your win total than hoping that you have some of those blowouts, more of those blowouts than the times that you're blown out by opponents. Those are going to happen. Those close games are going to happen too, and what you do with it in those kind of situations, to me, winning close games, taking care of crappy Charlotte teams, winning road games, those kind of things are more indicators that you have staying power and that you can improve as the season goes on. That's just kind of, to me, a winning team takes care of business in those close games. And of course, you know, the point to tie it all together is that if you win a lot of close games, you're going to have a lower point differential than a team like the Pistons, who's lost a bunch of close games and has a handful of blowouts that really kind of skews that point differential. It doesn't matter to me whether you beat the Spurs by 30 or you beat the Spurs by 15. It's one win. It's one game. San Antonio is going to try to regroup. We saw the New Orleans Pelicans come up with a strong effort after losing by 46 over the weekend to Dallas. They played hard at times. Brandon Ingram played well. If J.J. Redick and Drew Holiday had better games, maybe that would have been a different result for the New Orleans Pelicans. But you can control the fact about going into close games and playing well in the fourth quarter. That's good. That's what's going to happen in the playoffs. That's what's going to separate the good teams from bad teams. I know the Pistons don't know anything about playing close games in the playoffs these days, but trust me, it's a thing that happens in spring to the good teams. So that's my take on point differential. I don't think it means hardly anything, to be honest, in the NBA, and it's certainly not an indicator of future success for the teams. Now, that'll do it. Now, if you got a take on that, or if I'm wrong, or if you got some data to back that up, go ahead, give us a call, 810-666-1546 on the Google voicemail line. Give us your name, give us where you live, and tell me why point differential is the end-all, be-all about what's going to happen with NBA teams, and particularly with the Pistons, going forward. But this is your host, Matt Shook, of the Locked On Pistons podcast. We've got a kind of a dry week of games. No games left until Thursday. We will talk Dallas Mavericks sometime in the next couple days. I'm also chasing another interview and have some interesting notes about the schedule leading up to the trade deadline. I went through a bunch of stuff tonight and I figured I'd save it for one of the off days coming up. Schedule notes, almost as exciting as point differential notes. That's the stuff you get here on the Locked On Pistons podcast. Thanks for listening, everyone. Talk to you guys tomorrow.